Hello, and welcome to the Consistent Profits Podcast, brought to you by Inside Out Trading and Brian McAvoy, where the focus is on consistency, because when you have the consistent part down, profits become easy. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Consistent Profits Podcast. This is brought to you by Brian McAvoy. That would be me of Inside Out Trading. Today, I'm really excited to be interviewing Phil Newton of Antivestor. Thanks so much for being on the podcast today, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Phil runs the site Antivestor, but he started out hand-drawing charts in the mid-90s as a way to learn about the markets and put into practice what he was reading about in the textbooks. 2001, he went into full-time trading at a prop shop, but that came to an abrupt end after major health issues, and he was finally diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which nearly killed him. In January 2003, while still in recovery, he started trading his own accounts and managed to turn 1,000 pounds into 92,549 and change in around 8 months. Now he trades stocks, options, and index futures using a variety of mechanical rule-based trading systems, which he also teaches to small groups of serious traders who want to get results without being glued to the computer screen all day. He's very focused on systematizing and automating his trade so he can spend more time enjoying life, which is awesome. Again, thanks for being here, man.
Again, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to try and kind of spread the word that I think there's so many different ways of trading and they're all right. So it's always nice to get a different perspective on the markets. And sometimes it will resonate with people and other times it won't. So, you know, thanks for having me.
Yeah, indeed. So I got to ask, just because it's pretty cool sounding and it's different. How'd you come up with the name Antivestor anyway?
Well, originally, my site was called trading-strategies.info back in the early noughties because it was an information thing. It was an information site made sense, and I wanted to rebrand it, but I like to think that I do things in a slightly different way. So I was always like, I'm anti-investing. I'm not necessarily the anti-trader. I'm not necessarily a contrarian thinker in that regard, but I just don't agree with investing in the traditional sense and then eventually just percolating that over. It was like, oh, Antivestor made sense to me. So eventually I did a rebrand and got a .com and joined the .com boom about 15 years too late.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. Now, in reading your story, you got interested in stock trading like way back in high school before you were even of like legal age to start trading. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So when I was about 15, I went to a neighbor's house running an errands and he was on the phone talking to what I now know is his broker. He was talking about gold and buy this and sell that. And it was an in-depth conversation, which I was privy to part of that conversation. It just intrigued me. And I asked him, you know, what was all that about? And he said, oh, I buy and sell. And that's how he makes his money. And that's what he was doing. It just fascinated me, just everything that was going on. And he basically told me, he said, like, anyone can play the game of the stock market as long as you've got money to kind of buy into it or open a brokerage account. And coming from quite a poor background and upbringing, that fascinated me that anyone could participate in what was perceived by most people as an exclusive club. So I asked him to teach me and he said no. And it was the best. I was a bit pissed off to say the least, but that was the best thing you could have done for him because then it set about my own journey of trying to find out what was working for me. Because as we said a moment ago, there's so many ways of trading. And I suppose that the hardest thing is finding your path to, you know, to consistent trading. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's what it's set about with me.
Yeah, indeed. Well, so you got busy like right after you turned 18. At what point did it actually turn into an occupation for you, though?
It didn't until about 2001. Like most people, you're kind of scared of committing to something new and unknown. And I didn't realize that there was other people doing this. And kind of when I was learning and coming up in the ranks of trying to make it work, there was no internet, certainly not in the UK, in the same level that it is now. So there was no one to ask, no one to turn to. I thought I was the only person that was trading the markets, you know, like most people. But about 2000, 2001, the internet became a thing. In the UK, spread bet companies started to come about. So it just allowed easier access to the markets. Forex started to become a thing as well. Again, it just opened it up to the retail trader en masse because there was a lot of online brokerages. So it became a lot easier. There was a lot of prop shops starting to come about at the time, but that's where I went to work for. I was actually just finishing a second degree at university, and I bumped into a guy at one of the airports that I had a part-time job at, and they were at the helicopter center, and he had a prop shop essentially, and he invited me down, had an interest in trading, and he gave me a seat on his desk there. So that was where I spent around about 8 or 9 months before I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And then I was forced into trading my own accounts, and I was housebound for, you know, almost 3 years. So I had to make it work. I had no choice. So just trying to kind of make that leap of faith and trade my own money, the decision was taken away from me. I was forced into doing it because, like everyone, I've got food to buy, I've got bills to pay, I've got money to pay. And I couldn't, from then onwards, work a traditional job. So that trade your own money was a decision that was forced upon me to make it work. I had this skill set that I was using elsewhere, and there was no reason for me not to try and do it with my own money. And you know, proved it for myself over the next 8 months that, hey, maybe I've got something that works. I made a lot of mistakes, like most people early on, but the markets were quite forgiving back then, where you could drop it in the morning and make it back in the afternoon, or vice versa. You know, you have this opportunity to make a reasonably good money in a very short space of time.
Very cool. Now, you started in stocks, but then later...
The first trade I placed was in stocks,
right?
Or a stock, a company called Waterfall. But then I went on to futures at the prop shop, and then I was essentially trading futures initially, and then I got into currencies in a really weird way. I spent 12 years trading currencies. Sorry to interrupt you. But it was I looked on the phone to a friend who was also a trader at the time. And he said, "Do you trade currencies?" And I said, "No." And he said, "You should." So the next day I got a data feed for it. And that was how I got into currencies. It was just a random conversation. And I remember it to this day. So I stopped trading futures because it was a 24-hour market, so I could kind of pick and choose when I wanted to trade, because familiar Crohn's disease is, and it was for me back then, quite dramatic in that I get tired quite a lot. I get fatigued, so although it's not active for me right now, I do get tired on a regular basis. So it just allowed me to go, okay, I've got an hour where I'm feeling good now, and there's somewhere around the world some currency that's moving, and it just allowed me that opportunity to trade around my lifestyle, in my case my illness at the time. So that's what it allowed me to do, the currency markets.
Gotcha. Now, when you were doing the currency trading though, you were day trading that, correct?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. It was day trading, short-term swing trading, maybe lasting 1 to 3 days. So that was what I was primarily focused on back then.
Okay. Now, is that how you were trading the futures, or did you make a shift when you switched to currencies?
You know, I'm actually trading probably the same way that I did now back then, only I've got more rules in place that allow me to systematize and almost automate what I do, but I'm essentially trading the same strategies that I did back then. There's no revelation behind trading. You know, when you find something that works, you've just got to stick to it and keep doing it over and over and over again. I think the mistake a lot of traders make is they get something that works and then get bored and then decide to do something different. And it ends up a catastrophe very, very quickly. And it's just doing that same thing over and over again. I, for all intents and purposes, one of the patterns that I like to trade is breakouts, find consolidations, trade breakouts. And I did that. I just traded that one pattern for 12 years on currencies. And it's very, very profitable. I do something very similar now on index futures, do something very similar now on stocks. And it's just one of the tools that's in the arsenal of things that I like to trade.
Okay. Well, so along with breakouts, what other strategies do you like?
Breakouts. So there's three market conditions, which hopefully I'll answer your question. Markets can be going up, they can be going down, they can be going sideways. So I like to trade the trend, buy the dips, sell the rallies. So up and down, they're the two most mechanical versions of what I do, using a combination of moving averages to determine direction and find value areas around the moving averages. I use them more of a guideline rather than focus on the crossovers. And then we've got ranges, so we can trade the breakouts, bullish breakout, bearish breakouts. And then if price is in a range, if it's sufficiently tall or it has a good depth, and I can trade the range and trade reversals off the range lows to the range highs and vice versa. So they're the six patterns that I like to trade. The two that are left are counter trend. It just doesn't agree with my personality, trading against the grain. So I generally don't do it. But they're the broadly speaking, the six things that I like to do. About, I'd say 85, 90% of the time, I'm buying dips and selling rallies. It is the most mechanical way I can trade. And wherever possible, I'll default to, you know, trading the trend, because I hate that uncertainty. You know, one of the things that we all go through when we start out, and I was an especially emotional trader starting out, I want to try and remove the indecision, the hesitation, the should I be in this? Is this the right time? Where's my entry? Where's my stop loss? Where's my target? You know, all those things that we always ask ourselves, is this the right stock? Is this the right opportunity? Is it the right time? And I just wanted to get rid of those nuances, that though the devil and the angel on your shoulder constantly fighting that, having that conversation. Is it the right time? If it's not going up, it must be going down, and vice versa. You know, I just wanted to get rid of all of that. So I ended up focusing on trying to systematize my own system. So again, most of the time I'm buying dips and selling rallies, and I use moving averages as a framework to mechanize that decision-making process. You know, when all the averages are stacked on top of each other, the 200, the 50 and the 20, for example, and when they're all those three are stacked on top of each other, I'm bullish. I'm only looking for bullish trades. When price comes between the moving averages, that's my buy zone essentially. So when it goes back above all three moving averages, I'll get positions. And it, you know, the back of the envelope version is that that is as simple as I make it. So it, there's a little bit more to it to make it mechanical, but it allows me to automate those decisions. And again, I can get all the fancy performance reports that the software provides you to say, hey, you know, is this a good stock or time frame or index for this style of trading, the trading the trend? And I can get a 20-year history of saying, yeah, it looks good. We've got a nice equity curve. Great. There's no reason for me not to trade this. Then the second part of after that, you know, we've got the system that's working, is to be consistent and just trade that instruments constantly, or the time frame constantly, day in, day out. You know, the whole thing that I realized was consistency. The only way that you're going to make it work is to just find three or four things to trade and just trade the shit out of them and just keep going.
Yeah. Well, speaking of consistency, you know, what do you consider are like the main obstacles the traders run into? Because I mean, consistency is that's like everybody's challenge. So what do you consider probably like the top, you know, few obstacles that people run into as far as consistency?
I think jumping around from indicator to indicator, tool to tool, market to market, time frame to time frame. I'm a one time frame trader. I don't do top down analysis, just because it was written, you know, 50 years ago in a textbook by a psychologist. It doesn't mean that it's a good method. It works for some people. It doesn't work for me, because, as you know, you're laughing because you obviously have some similar viewpoints. You know, you can see opposing viewpoints. If you go from a monthly to a daily, there's two different directions can be happening, and that causes confusion. So I'm just trying to eliminate confusion. And so I generally one time frame. So it's one time frame, one indicator, or one tool to support it. And I only use indicators because it allows me to clinically say this is an event that has happened. It allows me a binary decision. Price has moved past or to or touched a moving average. And again, we could be talking about any tool, the tool doesn't matter. If we were talking 5 years ago, we would have been talking about Bollinger Bands. I was doing exactly the same thing, but just through the lens of a Bollinger Band. The tool doesn't make the trading opportunities. It's just how we approach it. So it's one time frame, one tool, and, you know, one setup. You know, in this case, buy the dip and sell the rallies. It's trading the trend. So the moving averages allow me to identify a trending environment, and then I can buy the dip. And that's the bit that people forget, is people want to buy the dip, but they forget to look for the trend first. So just recognize. So again, the moving averages allow me to recognize the market conditions. And similarly, it tells me when not to use them. So if we have multiple crosses in those moving averages, it says, yeah, you know what, now's not really the right time to focus on trending tools because the market conditions are not favorable. So maybe I just press pause, draw a big box around the whole area where I've got these multiple crosses, and then, you know, wait for the breakouts. Or, you know, if the range is definable in a robust fashion, then maybe I can trade the range as an optional extra. Again, I've got choices depending on how we interpret the chart, again, all through that lens of the moving averages.
Right. Yeah, very cool. Now, so you were trading Forex for a while, but you're back to stocks now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So why did you make that shift? What happened with currencies that they lost their appeal and
Found the currency market that back in sort of 2003, 2004, the currency markets are very easy. In fairness, it was you would have an Asian range in the UK trading session. There'd be a breakouts. It would move an average day's move by around 10 o'clock in the UK morning. There'd be a retracement over lunchtime into the early US session. You could buy the 50% retracements and it'd retest the high by four, by lunchtime in the US. And that's pretty much how the day went three times a week. It's an absolute minimum. And maybe there'll be a little bit of nonsense. So looking back on it, I wish I'd realized it at the time, but it was very easy by comparison to the market condition now. So I just found that the market conditions went very sloppy, very messy. They became directionless. It became more difficult to apply the same setups. I also found that the range of movements on an intraday basis and on an intra-week basis for that matter was just getting smaller and smaller. And I appreciate you can increase your position size, but just psychologically, I just couldn't wrap my head around. I'm trading, small movements where I'm used to, four or five times the size of movements. And again, I know I can increase the position size, but just psychologically, it just didn't, I couldn't wrap my head around it at the time. Also, the requirements for margin in 2009 changed for options. You didn't need the same requirements as what you did. There's no margin requirements. They basically eliminated them. So as a buyer of options, if the price of the option was $500, that was all it was going to cost me, $500. So it just allowed me the opportunity to do the same strategies in stocks, but use options as the vehicle to profit from directional movements as an alternative to trading stock. And it allowed me to, instead of trading one or two things and having most of my capital tied up in margin, to then go, now I can trade a portfolio of stocks, 10, 15, 20 stocks for the same, allocation of funds, if you like. It was just a smarter way of trading all of a sudden. So it was a combination of things that all happened at the same time, and I can just put my capital to better use over, multiple occurrences. Again, I'm a big fan of portfolio trading, either a portfolio of stocks. So for example, on the swing trade side of things, what I'm doing with daily charts is I have 25 stocks. That's it. That's all I'm looking at. So I just want to trade those setups consistently on those 25 stocks regularly, consistently to get paid at the end of the month or at the end of the quarter. And then a similar process is used for 60-minute time frames. So I can get paid at the end of the week or the end of the month with shorter time frames. And then the day trade stuff that I do, I can get paid at the end of the day. Or maybe I'll hold them overnight, depending on how the strategy unfolds for the time frames that I'm trading. So it just allows me to deploy multiple strategies, multiple trading occurrences, and focus my attention again. And all of this can be done in 60 to 90 minutes at the start of the day for me, because I don't need to be at the computer all day every day flicking through chart after chart. There's like the 25 things in my universe. To be fair, there's about 35, when I look at index futures and a few other things, because I'm trading multiple instruments as well. It's a very simple process to follow. Just buy the dip, sell the rallies. If there's a range, step aside or trade the range, wait for the breakouts. It's a very clinical decision because everything is as defined as I can make it so that I'm not thinking. And again, the main motivation is I've got Crohn's disease. I get brain fog quite regularly. I'm ill on a regular basis. In my case, it's not active as I mentioned, but I have permanent mild symptoms in my case. So it's just one of the things that I have to get used to. So the trading reflects, or the way that I trade reflects the life that I want to live, or the life that I have to live, in fairness. And when I'm not well, it just allows me to go, okay, there's my 60 minutes or 30 minutes or even 10 minutes. You can be done quite quickly some days, put the trades on or not, as the case may be, and go and do something else. And obviously, when I am well, because obviously I'm not ill all the time, it's just from time to time these days, thankfully, it just allows me to have a life around doing other things. I can go to the zoo, go hiking. I'm not interested in the Fed announcements, the news announcements. I can just spend other time doing other things without having to, be a full-time trader from an hours and time committed point of view.
Yeah. Well, now as far as so you have, if I understand you correctly, so you have kind of a set and forget system if you can just trade, matter of minutes a day. Or sorry, selling options or are you buying options?
I'm buying options. So I'm using options as an alternative to buying stock, because the capital requirements are significantly less.
Oh, true.
Which means, yeah, so which means that, you know, if the option is going to cost $500, for example, then that's all it costs me as a buyer. You know, my risk is defined by $500. My margin requirement is $500. You've got this, I tend to use the full price, the premium, as a built-in stop loss. So we don't need to monitor the exits. Like, there's my entry, buy the strike, buy sufficient time, you know, on the, you know, more time than I'll practically need to make the trade work or to see if it's going to work. But if it's not going to work, instead of being stopped out, I generally just let it expire. I've got till expiration to manage it better, either to get a reduced risk or get out at break even. Or, you know, sometimes you just, you know, the entry's the least important part. We all know that. You know, you can toss coins, it's the exit that matters. So rather than focus all my energy on being stopped out or where shall I get out if I'm wrong, well, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm going to mistime my entry. I've let go of that a long time ago. I've got the entry set up. So as long as directionally I'm right, I've got enough time. For example, on the daily swings, I've got 150 days minimum to be right. I only plan to, if I'm right, I'm only planning to be in it for about 30 days, 20, 30 days, the end of the month, essentially. But I've got 150 days to figure it out if it's not going right, if it's underwater. And I've seen so many trades turn around just because I mistimed the trade by, you know, maybe 5, 10, sometimes 15 days. And, you know, when you're wrong, you're always wrong. You know, it doesn't matter where the entry was. It's always going to get stopped. It's always going to. So rather than worry about where the entry was and where to get out from wrong, I just want to focus my energies on when or if I'm right, where am I going to take profits? And that, it's such a freeing and liberating feeling to not worry about being, what if I'm wrong? Well, it doesn't matter anymore. It's just like, when I'm right, I can manage it better. And if I'm wrong, I've got the opportunity to fix it. And to be fair, I've just had that with a couple of trades. AMAT, A-M-A-T, you know, that's one of the stocks that I like to trade. It was a buy the dip opportunity. It went sideways for, you know, 1.5, 2 months. I think it's AMAT. Let me just double check it. It went sideways. So I got in March on a buy the dip, classic sort of moving average crossover. It came back to the 50p moving average. So in from around $120, it went sideways for a month and a half. It just took too long to get there. So I can get out at break even, small profits, and reposition. And now it's starting to move slowly still, but it's still moving favorably. But it was underwater for a month and a half.
Yeah.
But if you're stopped out in that traditional sense with stock, firstly, you're locking up your capital. Secondly, you've appreciated the loss. Well, I've got till expiration to figure it out. Well, in this, or manage it better, as I like to say, in this case, it eventually moved favorably. I've avoided being stopped out. I don't have to worry about a re-entry, and everything worked out fine. And again, if I'm wrong, it's always going to be wrong. But because I've got that trade and I've got till expiration to see if it's going to turn around, to try and manage it more effectively, I also have a rule where I don't take another trade until that one's been managed. So it forces me to not overtrade that stock, especially if it's sloppy and it's going up and down and yo-yoing back and forth until that range is perhaps confirmed. It just forces me to sit on the sidelines. This trade has got till expiration to be managed more effectively. I can't manage it effectively. I don't close a trade for a monetary loss. I want to try and get out at break even or better. And it just forced me to go, you know what, just sit on the sidelines, wait. Okay, it's not worked. It expires worthless. That's when I take my loss. So the worst part about the way I trade, whether it's the daily swings, the weekly swings, you know, the same process is used even with the day trades. I generally close the day trades, obviously, at the end of the day, take whatever's there or not, as the case may be. But it just forces me not to overtrade in less than ideal market conditions. And I find that that works. So I end up focusing all my energies on, if I'm right, you know, the hardest decision I have is, when should I take the profits? You know, it's like, that's the best, because the losses are going to roll off on expiration. I've already accounted for that. So the worst part about it is you're holding the losses until expiration. That, again, a lot of my students tend to, it's a little bit of a mental gear change to work the head around that. But when they get used to it, it's such a liberating feeling to not worry about, well, what if I'm wrong? Well, it doesn't matter anymore. You're just trying to figure out, how can I manage this trade more effectively?
Mm-hmm. Well, so how did you wind up helping other traders anyway?
Pardon?
How did you wind up helping other traders?
Probably like most people, you in my case, it was kind of pre-social media. We were on forums back then. Trade to Win, I think one of your past guests, John Foreman, was was on there. That's kind of like how we met. But you just start posting stuff and you're getting involved in the community on public forums, and you post stuff, and you realize that you're one of the anomalies, that you're actually making this work and the other 10,000 people are not. But you just start getting private messages saying, hey, can you show me what to do? And, you know, it just kind of snowballs from there. Eventually, you know, people just started saying, you know, can you show me? Can you put some time aside? Can you train me? I'll pay you. Oh, people pay me, will you? You know, and that's where it came from. And I found that I really enjoyed helping other traders and get a leg up. I had something that was working. Because of the way that I try and approach my own trading and try and, back then it was a little bit more discretionary than what it is right now, but try and systematize what I'm doing. Certain things have to happen. It was always going to be, if this, you know, series of things has happened, then I'm going to take action. So it was always like a checklist, like a pilot has a pre-flight checklist. And that was attractive to quite a large number of people who, firstly, were either brand new or very busy people, where they couldn't spend hours analyzing stock charts for whatever divination they were looking for. So it just progressed from there. And then over the years of, again, trying to answer my own question, how do I make this more mechanical? How do I take the discretion out of my own trading? And then it just firms up the strategies and the process that we use. So, you know, these days it's a very methodical, very mechanical process for the two primary strategies that I like. And again, it's attractive to quite a number of people because it means that, you know, to answer my own question, how can I do this in the least amount of time possible and still get the rewards from trading? It means that people can do it around the work. They can check in at lunchtime. They can check in at breakfast. If they've got a bit more time to look at the lower time frame stuff, you can check in. Again, one of the strategies I have with futures trading is you check in at 10 o'clock and you either have a setup or you don't. It's either there or not. It's a binary decision. And if yes, you place the trade. And if no, you come back tomorrow. So a lot of people find that quite attractive because that's what I want for me. I just want to know, do I have anything to do right now? If yes, place trade. If no, come back tomorrow. So again, everything could be done. And if you want to trade everything, if you've got a little bit more time, it's going to take you 30 to 60 minutes. And maybe when you're learning, it'll take you an hour and a half, 2 hours. If you've got the morning, you can get everything you need done in a very short space of time. And again, when you get used to, like with anything, when you get used to any process, you can condense that down into, you know, 20, 30 minutes, you know, should you choose to. Again, like learning how to drive. You remember when you learned how to drive, it took you a long time to figure it out and to not look down when you were changing gears or doing the indicators and pressing all the foot pedals. You know, eventually, when you get a little bit of practice at some basic maneuvers, driving becomes very, very easy. And that's how I compare what I do. I mean, I often refer to what I do as a production line process, because like you're in a factory, the decisions that you make are going along the production line. And if you get a no on any of those decisions, you flick the trade off into the reject bin. Eventually, what we want to do is we want to get, you know, five main decisions, so that we get the completed product and we click confirm and send on the trade. You know, and that's what I want to do. I want that for myself first and foremost. But as you said, that is quite attractive to, you know, other people who are interested in, you know, just finding opportunities on a regular, consistent basis.
Well, so as far as with the Antivestor, I mean, are you basically teaching people the strategies and the methods, or do you have like a signal service? Or
I've had a signal service in the past, and I found that it doesn't work from the point of view as I want people to be able to feed themselves. I know it's a little bit of a cliche, but what I found was people weren't understanding the methodology behind it. So they weren't getting the most out of those signals. So I've done that in the past is the short answer. What I prefer to do is to show people how I do what I do. And there's links somewhere next to this video. I give two free strategies. The two strategies that I'm talking about, the breakout and the buy the dip, the semi-mechanical and fully mechanical process. I'll outline those in the link in the description, presumably. And it's a 20-minute video. It takes you through both strategies. And what I prefer to do is show you how to do what I do, because I think that's more important, that you're self-sufficient rather than be spoon-fed. And I always think back to my own experiences and kind of think back to, you've read Reminiscence of a Stock Operator. There was about Jesse Livermore in the turn of like the 1900s, 1905 sort of era in the stock markets. And one of the things that he described, even, you know, 110 years ago, was he fell prey to taking an alert or a signal off a fellow trader And you're then reliant on when to get out, when to manage it, when to exit it, you know, all those decisions in between. And you're reliant on that person. And I had my own experience of that, where a friend of mine had convinced me to use my own money on his trade idea, but also to he would give me, say, £500. And I would, so I was using all my money, all my margin. And he just wanted his share of the trade. And he didn't realize that there was margin requirements because we were trading stock. But it basically convinced me to put all my money up on his trade idea. And I was completely dependent on him telling me when to get in, when to get out. And like at the time, I was an experienced trader, but like I didn't know what I was doing because I didn't understand the logic behind why he was interested in this stock. And that's what I'm trying to articulate. It's probably failing slightly. So I'd rather tell people, here's the system, here's the process, here's the list of stocks that this strategy works favorable on, here's all the market conditions that it works in, here's when not to use the system, so that you can have full confidence that when you're placing the trade, that it's the right stock, the right trade, the right strategy, the right market conditions, and on average, you'll make money. That's more important to me than spoon feeding someone, because you're just going to create more heartache and frustration if you give someone alerts without understanding or the knowledge behind why that's happening. Sorry, I'm a little bit passionate about that. I've just had positive and negative experiences, mostly negative things with alerts. The trade that I mentioned was reliant on making some money. I was quite a bit underwater, and then for one day, for 1 hour, it was profitable. I ended up phoning him and saying, we're making some money, what shall I do? I'm like sweating, like panicking, you know, and he goes, oh yeah, let's take the profit, you know, because he didn't realize that like I'd had two margin calls on this trade. and he didn't know that. He doesn't know that I've had a margin call. He just sees that, oh yeah, just send me my couple hundred dollars over. And I'm like, really? he just wanted his like pocket change is what it turned out to be. But like, you know, that's what I want people to avoid, you know, that what shall I do in this situation? So again, I'd rather show people what to do, why to do it, when to deploy a strategy. So that, you know, if I pop off this mortal coil, if I get run over a bus, if I relapse with my Crohn's and pop off tomorrow, then you can carry on without me. Is that for me is more important than, again, spoon feeding someone without understanding of what's going on.
Oh, that's good. I mean, yeah, I'm the same way. I would prefer to help people be self-sufficient. So sure. Well, that said, and it's funny because I've had some, not
I think we've all had one of those, haven't we?
Help. And they were like, you know, but I've been using the signal service and I like it. And so,
you know, it works for some people. You know, I'm not, it's just in my experience, the people, when I ran the signal, sorry, rolling over your conversation there, the way that I preferred people to think about it was an augmentation to their analysis, like take it or don't take it. I was sending out an alert every day or two or three sometimes. Mm-hmm. And here's all the reasons why. So I gave the full understanding of what they were doing. So just think about it as like done for you research. If it agrees with your research, go for it. If it doesn't, there'll be another one tomorrow. So more of a research than a blind alert service. Sorry, what were you saying about your signal service?
No, I just... And no, and I agree with you. That is one approach with it. The main thing I tell people is, you know, if you're gonna use somebody else's analysis and their advice, you know, do your best to understand what their strategy is, and so they kind of understand the thought process behind it. But then always, as with everything, test it out, make sure that yeah, it actually does perform over time, and then you can relax and be okay with it. But you know, establish that proof that yes, it does actually work, and they do know what they're doing.
That's why I like this. And what I can do is I just really like, do you want, I can show you the engine behind it if you want. I've just realized we're recording this. I always forget that we have visuals on some of these podcasts. If you want, I can just give you the quick visual of the mechanical strategy. It'll take me about 2 minutes to go through if you want. Just maybe a nice place to finish.
Well, actually,
we're out of time.
Let's start. Just realize that most people are going to be listening to this.
Okay.
Like the great majority of people are, you know, like listening to it on their way to work.
How about this? For anyone that's listening, I can send a 2-minute video Just send me an email and I'll send you a little video. Send me the stock that you want me to analyze and I'll show you the process and the strategy performance reports that come with it. Because at the click of a button, I can just say, hey, is this type of style of trading, is it good or worthwhile on this particular stock? And I can go back for the last 20 or so years and say, here's what it would have looked like. So that for me, as long as I'm seeing a nice steady equity curve, then I've got an expectation that that should continue for the next 6 or 8 months as an absolute minimum. It's been working fine for the last 20. The next 12 months should be fine as well. And then I'll reevaluate that stock as whether it should be in my portfolio for the following 12 months. So if anyone wants that, send me a message. You can get to me through the website and I'll happily look at any stocks that you want me to.
Yeah. Well, and again, your website is antivestor.com.
Correct.
And yeah, and you said that you also have a couple of free strategies. It's got the short intro to your two favorites that you like to use.
Absolutely. There'll be the two strategies that we focused on today. There'll be a full outline. Again, nothing held back, no catches, no gimmicks. Just need your email and I'll send you the link for it. But there'll be the breakout strategy fully outlines where the entries, the exits, the stops, the targets. It's focused on futures, but it will work on other instruments as well. And then there's the mechanical strategy that I mentioned as well, the buy the dips, and obviously works with the sell the rally, the opposite side, the bullish and bearish. And that's the 100% mechanical rule sets that was just described and that gives me the algorithm and all the strategy performance reports. So there's full disclosure on all the rule sets that I'm using there.
Yeah, very cool. Now your coaching that you offer, though, you've got you call it production line trading, right?
That's the process. I generally refer to what I do as production line trading. Yeah. So everything that I'm doing is all encapsulated in that.
Yeah. But how long does it take to get through your training?
There are 56 3 to 5 minute videos. The strategy, some of it's mindset, some of it's how to manage portfolio, some of it's other bits, but the actual strategy side of it is very short. You can probably get through all of the training in an afternoon, you know, if you wanted to go through and put it on, you know, 1.5 times speed or whatever you want to do. I don't know how fast you listen to it. You probably get through everything in a week if you're just doing it an hour a day. So that's the DIY version, the actual training side of it. It's very quick to get through. I've tried to do it all in bite-sized formats because I don't want to spend 2 hours. While I am a talker, as you've probably gathered, I've tried to be very condensed in the training that I do. So you can just get, here's the info. And if you ever need to go back to an element, you can go, I'm having a problem with this. All the titles are very descriptive. I can just dip in, get the 3 to 5 minute reminder, refresher, and then, you know, dip out to the next thing that you want to need. I also provide, you know, ongoing support for as long as you want. And you can send me a message anytime to get help, support. If there's a stock that you're looking at that you want help interpreting, because maybe it's not as clear as what you think, or a setup that you're looking at. Again, most people, most of my students send me, hey, I'm looking at this. What do you think? And I'll either give a thumbs up or some, you know, feedback and critique on, you know, what they're trading. So I try and take my role as a mentor very, very seriously, just because people are putting their trust and faith in me to help them get results. So I want to be there for them and not be a, you know, absentee mentor. So I just want to make sure that people get results. And that's one of the things that I am very proud of. If you look at the website and any of the recordings that I have, I generally post up, you know, what my students have done the previous week, just because of the reasons that I mentioned, because it's a repeatable process and mostly rule-based, you know, my students generally get results quite fast. So I am very, very proud of that fact, because there's no discretion. I think that, just going back to one of your early questions, you know, why do traders go wrong? It's not necessarily that they go wrong. It's just that it's finding the right strategy and the process for them. And early on in your trading career, you don't want discretionary decisions. You want to know with clarity what you're doing and when you're doing it. And I think it's a great starting block to have a very rigid set of rules that you can check, place the trade. And then you can apply discretion later on, should you want to. But I think most traders make the mistake of starting with discretion, but they don't have the experience to make those discretionary decisions, because the clue's in the name, it's discretion.
Yeah, very true, very true.
It's a great place to start. And again, for me personally, I've done it backwards. I started off discretionary, come up to rule-based trading. I just want to remove the emotion, the should I or should I have not taken that trade. It's either there or it's not, place to trade.
Gotcha. Yeah, very good.
Selfishly, I want it for me first.
Well, that's very cool. And you shared quite a lot. It's been really good. And again, you know, for everybody, you know, if you want to catch up with Phil, you like what he's got to say and, you know, resonates with you, antivestor.com, and go ahead and check out his site and what he's got there. And yeah, as far as, you know, advice for our listeners, any, you know, last words of wisdom before we wrap things up here?
Enjoy life. Life is worth enjoying. You should not spend all your waking hours, certainly not flicking through chart after chart like a mindless zombie. Give yourself restrictions. The one thing that I've learned, I had a priest stand over me, giving me the last rites. I was very ill when I was eventually diagnosed. The one thing it did, and I think everyone who's had the recent experiences that we've had, we'll just leave that hanging there, is everyone's had that realization. Find something to do outside of work, outside training. It should involve family. It should involve fun. And put it on the calendar. Like two or three times a week, I go and do something fun. Me and the wife, we like hiking. We like going to zoos. Going to love, like seeing animals, having experiences. Do something with your family. You know, and that's probably the most important thing that you can do. Because if you're stressed, then that will come out in your trading. You know, so find time to relax and enjoy yourself. I spent last week at a log cabin in the woods. I feel so relaxed. I didn't realize I was quite stressed and wound up, but I feel so relaxed right now. And that's coming out in the decisions that I'm making, not just with training, but with life in general as well. So yeah, find time to have fun is all I'm trying to get to. I like to laugh at silly things as well. Hence the obsession with flamingos.
No, that is sound advice. So kind of like in the book, the one thing, that's one thing I appreciated with that. They said when you're getting out your calendar to plan the year, the first thing you put on it is your vacation time.
Days off, yeah. It's quite uncanny when you give yourself restrictions from certainly the work point of view, you get more done. And the more free time I allocate for myself, then the better I am at the other things that I've got to do when I'm dedicated to working, whatever that may be for you. But less is more is the, again, another cliche, but you know, who would have thought grandma was right? Do everything in moderation.
Yeah, indeed, good advice. Well, Phil, again, thanks for taking your time today. And
thank you for having me.
You know, sharing all
really
that you did.
Brian, thank you.
Appreciate it. And for everybody listening, you know, again, if you like what you heard, swing by site, antivestor.com. And, you know, if you got any questions, you know, by all means, reach out to Phil or me. And other than that, we'll see everybody on the next episode of the Consistent Profits Podcast. Cheers.
Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us today on the Consistent Profits Podcast, brought to you by Inside Out Trading. Make sure to swing by Inside Out Trading and pick up your copy of The Proven Formula for Consistent Monthly Profits. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe on your favorite channel, and we'll see you on the next episode. Cheers.